Good day, everybody, and welcome back to the Coach's Plan Podcast. Bienvenue et bonjour au podcast Plan de Coach. I'm your co-host, PL Savoie, and we have a great episode for you guys today. Before we jump into it, we just wanted to let you guys know that Season 6 from the Coach's Plan Podcast is sponsored by the Wellness Program by Coach NB. If you guys don't know what the Wellness Program is, if you're a coach looking to add to your coaching toolbox, these activities can lead to PD points and awesome gift cards. Please check out the Wellness Program. This month's activity revolves around helping you manage your time. You still have 2 weeks to till the end of April, so get those activities in. For the month of May coming up, we have a self-care plan activity that will help you guys create a self-care plan that reflects your restorative activities tailored to you. So please check out the Wellness Program presented by Coach NB. You can find it on the Coach NB website at coachnb.ca. Without further ado, today's guest has been the Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Manager for the Halifax Wanderers FC, a head coach for the Halifax County United Soccer Club, and currently an EDI coaching lead for Canadian Sport Institute Atlantic. Please help me welcome Marvin Okello.
First of all, thanks for having me on here, Luke. Really appreciate it. And really, I'm just a lover of sports, and more specifically, soccer's been the sport that's kind of navigated my career, helped me stay in the sport world. But in short, you know, I'm an immigrant from Kenya who moved here with my family, initially to Fredericton, New Brunswick, where you're recording out of, in good old New Brunswick. And eventually landed in Halifax, Nova Scotia in 2001. Soccer allowed me many opportunities playing on the provincial team, 2005 Canada Games team for Nova Scotia, and eventually led to me working with the Halifax Wanderers from 2018 until January of this year when I left. And I've had coaching positions, I've ticket sales, retail manager, community initiatives, diversity officer, and now it's led to my position that I'm in now with Canadian Sport Institute Atlantic as the EDI coaching lead, and ultimately just trying to give back to the sport that has given me so much.
So as an EDI coaching lead, like what is kind of your day-to-day look like in that sense? It's CSI Atlantic, right? So it's not just in Nova Scotia, if I'm not mistaken. It's like across all Atlantic Canada?
For the most part, but I mostly focus in Nova Scotia and New Brunswick are the two main regions that my scope is. But initially, it's really just to increase the number of diverse coaches and then to support them and bring awareness around some of their struggles and barriers that they face, and help remove those barriers that a lot of those diverse coaches face, rather in the BIPOC community or wherever rural communities. Obviously, there's things like accessibility that we work through, but my main projects right now are launching a new Canadians coaching program. So it's just another pathway for immigrants and new Canadians to really have someone like myself navigate their journey through sport, whether they want to be a community coach or a high performance coach. It really doesn't matter. Ultimately, we want to support them. My scope is really the community coaches. And once they become a performance coach, I kind of hand them off to my coworker, Allison, who runs a VIP program. But yeah, that's one of the main programs that I'm going to be launching in the next few weeks here, in addition to things like supporting the Black and Indigenous Coaching Mentorship Program, which I spoke about on the first podcast of the Coach's Idea that I started, as well as a way of having different diverse voices on and kind of share their experiences on the podcast.
Nice. How would that kind of transpose into rural communities language-wise? In Atlantic Canada as a whole, it's always been focused, you know, French, English before. How does that kind of play a role? Like, you know, like I'm Francophone myself, but like growing up, I know there's always been that, not battle, but the trying to make sure that the rural Francophone communities have leadership roles for Francophones. How does that kind of transpose into Indigenous communities, you know, in Atlantic Canada?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good question. And admittedly, the language as part of it has definitely come up on numerous levels. You know, as you start talking about a new Canadians coaching program, for example, you know, there's going to be a lot of different languages for those immigrants. And obviously, I don't know all of them.
Yeah.
You know, but I am trying to start with the really important basic ones here. Like, you know, you mentioned Francophone, and French is obviously huge for New Brunswick. It's Canada wide as well. You can't become multilingual unless you have English and French. I don't know if a lot of people know that actually. So like, for instance, when we moved here from Kenya, my parents spoke four languages, but legally they were only considered bilingual because French wasn't one of the languages that they knew. So you can know 10 languages and you're still legally only considered bilingual, right? And those are the some of the barriers that I talk about. You know what I mean? Where somebody
I didn't know
literally
that at
knows,
all, yeah.
somebody literally knows four, five, six languages, but in the system, they're only marked as bilingual because Canada's laws state that you have to have English or French to be considered multilingual, but that's not how that works. If you're multilingual, you're multilingual. You know what I mean? So it's working around systems like that that maybe don't really make the most sense, to be honest, to support people in their career journeys and their, even just getting out in the community and conversing with people. It can be a barrier for people, right? So if I'm launching a program and I don't even know the languages, how do you go about it? So it's really important for myself. Like I'm taking French on Super Duolingo
Nice.
because it's important, and eventually I want to be able to have French guests on podcasts and be able to translate things into French, or just even be able to go to New Brunswick and have a conversation in French because it's, I don't know what the word I'm looking for here. You get a lot more engagement, is the word really, with people if you know their language and they can speak freely without having to think about translating words. Like my first year of school was really tough because I didn't know English. So I had to go to class, and there was an extra class I would take where we would be learning English. And I'll be honest, some of it was funny because they'd have a picture of, let's say, a cow, right? And then they'd have the word. And then the funniest thing to me was then they'd have the sound. I'd be like, a cow noise. I'm like, yeah, like a cow is pretty universal everywhere. Like I don't need to hear the sound. I got the picture and I got the word, like I could probably put piece together, But that's a long, long answer of saying really just trying
Speaking cow
to
is a global language.
exactly. But no, it's just working with every individual who has their own language and in certain ways. Even slang is a thing, and there's people who aren't as literate as others, even though they speak a language. But it's just meeting people where they're at, and that's why I'm trying to learn French as well, so that I'm not going into a French community and speaking English, and it's a barrier for them to even communicate with me, so I can't understand how to support them.
You said you didn't speak English at all when you moved to Canada?
No, Swahili was my first language that I spoke, and then I spoke a little bit of Arabic as well.
Wow. Okay. So this kind of brings up a good point. For a coach that would be presently coaching a team, and that they would have maybe new members that are either from rural communities or immigrants, what would you say that a coach could do to facilitate the kind of opportunity that that individual is having? And for instance, you were in that position as an athlete. What would you kind of do now if you were in a position of a coach who came into that scenario?
The good thing about anybody who is going into a coaching role, you're generally dealing with athletes and families, right? So sometimes if you can't 100% communicate with the athlete, you have to bring some support people in, whether that's the parents, whether that's a sibling, or somebody who can help you with that communication piece, right? And I've had to do this actually in my life as well. Where you speak to the mother who might be a little bit more fluent in English than the child that you're coaching, and you really just create a rapport with whoever is the strong English speaker or whatever language you're communicating with, and then you work with them to make sure that you're explaining how the session is going to go, for instance. So it's not like back and forth all the time and you're getting them to come on the field to explain a practice, but it's like, hey, you can go through the session plan with them and then have them explain to their child, hey, here's what they're going to be doing today. And if you need the aid of images, because sometimes when there is language barriers, images really help, as well as using your hands and signals, because again, there's some things that are global, So really, it's using whatever tools you have at your disposal to be able to make sure that you're making those connections. And sometimes, like I said, you might have to display some images to just to support if there is a slight barrier with the language as well, and or actions with your hands and or just showing them literally with your feet or something. If you're playing soccer, like just pick up the ball and show them what you're going to do.
Cool. No, that's awesome. I didn't. Well, yeah, that's a cool method to do. It kind of goes back to the similar to that class that you were saying. Maybe they're not putting cow sounds when you're coaching, but I mean, you're showing images to facilitate the learning process, right?
Exactly,
Through illustrations and
and
stuff.
it's really important, you know. And for me, even when I first came here, language is the biggest barrier that you face because, you know, if you can't communicate things, how can you portray what you need, what you want, how you're feeling, all because all of those things matter, not only in sport but in life, right? I could be having a really bad day, and maybe I'm not as motivated, but if you can't communicate that to your coach or whatever, it could set up for a really tough session for both the coach and the athlete, where maybe if the coach doesn't, support me properly that way, I might not come back if they don't get what I'm going through. And maybe
Yeah.
they're a bit harder on me. And this is where I think it's really important for everyone to be aware of, inclusion and diversity and equity and these things, because ultimately we're all different and we're all navigating the world differently based on our nature and nurture, and we just have to be really appreciative of the fact that everyone is different.
Yeah, I like that. I remember kind of I had a podcast earlier last season with Aisha Sintish. I don't know if you know who she's from, out of Toronto.
Yeah, I've heard
And
the name.
awesome. Well, yeah, we had a cool podcast there. She was giving me some cool insight on how like her experience have during her throughout her journey and her career. And one thing that we kind of spoke about was if we remove all of these barriers, because oftentimes when we speak about high level sport, right, you speak about the best of the best, right? And I remember her saying that if you remove the barriers at the grassroots level and you reinforce the support that there is at the grassroots level to allow opportunity for more individual, then you will get the best of the best. In the sense that the top level has always been the best of the best, but the issues are the barriers how to get there. And that's where you see, maybe a kid from rural New Brunswick or rural Nova Scotia who's super passionate, who's super talented, and just never got the opportunity to get to that high level just because there were barriers, maybe financial barriers, maybe ethical barriers, maybe language barriers. Maybe like you said, maybe they went to a practice and something happened and the coaches didn't facilitate how they were feeling or didn't really take it in heart-wise, in the sense that, like, oh, maybe like you said, you didn't know that they were having a bad day, and you turned that person off to the sport because you didn't completely do your duty as a role model in some sense.
And you don't always have to do it the first time around, too, right? Like the some people, because it is tough sometimes as a coach when you're navigating, 20, 30 plus athletes, and there's a new one into the fold, and you have some dynamics that you're already understanding with the players that you know, and then a new one comes in, you don't really know the level of support that they need, right?
Okay.
And I went through that in my sport journey, and a lot of what I'm able to help break down barriers is because I've went through those barriers myself, and I've had to navigate those barriers either with my parents or with other community support. So for the example that I'm going to give is when I moved to Nova Scotia in 2001 from Fredericton. I went to a tryout for one of the local soccer clubs, Scotia Olympics it was called at the time, and I was unknown. Nobody really knew me. It was, school hadn't started yet or anything. So I went to the tryouts, and they just did the classic scrimmage where you just play for 60 minutes, and then at the end they tell you if you're invited back the next day or not. So, after the 60 minutes, I had scored two goals and had an assist in my team's 4-1 win. So in my mind, I'm like, awesome, I crushed that, And I get invited back the next day. We play again, and so kind of similar. Our team won 3-0. I had a goal and an assist, playing an attacking position. I played in three different attacking positions, and I felt like I really contributed a lot and was definitely on the team, if not a starter. Then the list comes out, and I'm not on it. and I'm like, what is going on here? Like, I had two really great days. I had more than four goal contributions over the 2 days, and I really thought that I was a good team player as well on top of all that. It's not like I was just like selfish. Like, I tried to bring others into the game, and I thought I communicated well and all those things. I thought I showed I could be a team player. So I was shook when I didn't see my name on the list. And instead of just getting mad, I talked to my dad, and I was like, Dad, what do you think I can do about this? Like, is it okay to talk to the coach and ask him just to give me another look, or ask him to explain why he didn't pick me? And he's like, yeah, I mean, if you feel, you played well, and I think you did too, yeah, worst that can happen is he'll just tell you maybe there's something that he saw that you didn't see or whatever. And maybe there's somebody who didn't show up to try out or whatever, who has your position, who knows? So I called the coach, and I spoke to him, and he was like, listen, Marvin, he's like, I'll be honest, I just wasn't really paying attention to you. There's so many other kids that I had on the kind of the bubble that I was focusing on that I didn't actually really get a good look at you. So you know what you can do? You can come to our next practice, and then I'll get an actual really good look at you, and I'll make sure to actually evaluate you. And if you got a case, then you'll be on the team. So I thought that, A, that was really good of him to give me that opportunity. That shows that he owned, the mistake, and maybe there was a mistake made, maybe there wasn't, but he gave me another opportunity, which was really, really good for me, even in feeling welcomed to the province and the sport here, right? So I went to that practice like the next week, had a really good practice. Again, we just scrimmaged, and I was involved in almost all of the goals. Really, really felt like I showed what I could do, and at the end, not even before the end of the practice, about halfway through, he's like, Marvin, I made a mistake. Like, you're definitely on the team, and you're right. Like, you're probably one of my starters, to be honest. And then within a couple of weeks, I was one of the captains. So, it what went from a horrible, could have been a horrible experience if I just kind of myself let it go and was like, oh, just accepted that I'm not on the team. But people make mistakes. And, at least I leaned with intention, and I was like, hey, I'm not saying I'm the best or whatever, but maybe you made a mistake. I just feel like I deserve another chance. And he gave me that opportunity, and I'll forever be grateful for him, because it led to me being on the provincial team, and he ended up coaching me on the provincial team, and eventually I made the Canada Games, and yada yada. And here I am many years later, thanks to that opportunity that he gave me. And
And if
I'll
you look at
forever
it
be
like from
grateful.
an outside sports perspective too, like that's awesome. Just the fact, like even let's say if it would have went south the other way, if you would have, went to practice and it just wouldn't turn out the way you would want, at least that coach gave you not even just an opportunity for the sport, but now that you know moving on, moving forward, if you ever come across an opportunity in life, like if anybody listening as well was a youth and is going across an opportunity who's not sure they didn't get the results that they wish they would be getting, it's never too late to try to go and figure it out. Reaching out, going further. Like you could have literally just sat there and said, well, they cut me, that's it. And then your mindset is, I'm just gonna sit and just keep going, like you said. But instead you were confident in your abilities. You knew that you did something good. You have a passion for the sport, and you did something that, oftentimes some people might have not even reached out just because they were either scared or anxious to do so, or maybe kind of not sure what the answer was going to be, and they were maybe too scared it was going to turn out negative. Whereas you reached out and you got an opportunity, which is something that can be transposed into, in my opinion, multiple aspects of life, right? Like
It's a
jobs in the
fear of
last year.
rejection, right? It's a fear of
Yeah,
rejection and fear of
exactly.
failure.
Yeah, exactly. And I just think that's super cool that they gave you that opportunity to demonstrate what you knew you had, and now it obviously transposed into a bunch of cool other things that you were able to do in your career, right? So imagine, those little stories across Canada or across the globe. What other opportunities can come from a decision or a situation that you thought wasn't favorable?
Exactly. There's a number of them, even on a grander scale than myself. I never made it to the upper echelons of soccer myself, but
What positions did you play?
I play pretty much. It's easier to say what positions I don't play, which is a center back and goalie. But
Okay.
other than that, I play every position on the field. Even my Canada Games year, I would play left back, and then if we needed to switch to an attacking formation without making a sub, I would just go to left forward, or one of the forward positions because I could do both jobs. So it's one of the things that's actually allowed me a lot of opportunities in the sport is my adaptability, because again, I never wanted to be cut. So if a coach was like, we're full in the right wing position, I'd be like, cool. What other positions you need? I can play center mid, I can play left wing, I can, so that also created a lot of opportunities for me, my willingness to be flexible. But for me, the things that's really important in even that last story, and you said it too, is creating opportunities, right? And that's ultimately what I'm supposed to do and trying to do in my role, is to create opportunities for immigrants and those people who don't get the same chances that other people do. People with neurodiverse diversity, people with physical limitations, mental limitations, emotional limitations. Like really, it's trying to work with all of those different barriers that people have, but still allow them to feel like they can conquer them and participate in sport. And you never know how far they can get, right? Like we've heard the classic story of Alphonso Davies in Edmonton. Right, the Born to Be Academy gave him an opportunity and end up being one of the best players ever to play for Canada, if not the greatest, and a huge ambassador for the sport, and playing for Bayern Munich in Germany, and looks like he might be going to Real Madrid soon in Spain. So opportunities ultimately is what we're trying to create in sport, and you never know what can happen once you give kids and youth and athletes those opportunities.
Yeah, it even comes back. You made me think of that movie. I forget the name. I think it was Mark Wahlberg, the football movie.
What, The Longest Yard, was it?
No, I'm longest was Adam Sandler. I think it was with I think it's Impossible, Invincible.
I know the movie you're saying. I can't
It's
remember the
like
title myself, but
40-year-old football player who finally makes it to the Cleveland Browns, I believe, or something like that. But just like that. Actually, I've seen this the other day. If I would have told you how many red cards you've seen this week, you probably won't be able to tell me, right? But if I would have told you for this podcast, I'll give you $100 every red card you saw this week, you would have came to me with a list today, right? Of how many red
of
cards you
course.
saw. To kind of transfer the conversation a little bit, when I got into sport, I haven't been in sport that long, but when I got into the professional world of sport, the behind the scenes, I'll say, I was baffled by the amount of volunteers or the amount of work that goes behind events or tournaments and all that. What's your take on like the communities of volunteers and how do we give back to the communities, right? Like I said, there's so much work that goes behind the scenes, and I was straight up baffled. I didn't understand how much work went into all these initiatives, and how would we transfer that to general public? How do we make them aware of like there's more than just the coach, the player, and the referee? There's a lot of moving pieces, and how do we make them aware? But also, how do we give back to the support of a community?
Sure. Well, I mean, there's that saying, it takes a whole community, not only to raise a child, but to create something special, right? And to support that child or that sport or whatever it might be, right? So for me, volunteers are massive in that sport community, right? Because there's only so much finances to go around in sport, as you know, and a lot of that sometimes comes from the government or fundraising or whatever it might be. So volunteers are massive to the success of sports. And you look at things like the North American Indigenous Games or the Canada Games. Like I volunteered for the Canada Games when they were here in Nova Scotia, and that really taught me a lot about the value of volunteers, right? And for me, the most important thing about supporting volunteers is having a good structure and organization that doesn't waste the volunteers' time and doesn't cause them to have a negative experience,
Okay.
because you need those volunteers to feel like they had a good time, so they continue to come back, they continue to support, that you show the appreciation for what they're doing, not only in your words by saying thank you, being kind to them if you're asking them to do a task, making sure you say please, all those little things that really go a long way in making sure that somebody feels welcomed, feels supported, feels valued, heard, and seen, and all those good things, right? So for me, it's a responsibility of everybody. It's responsibility of the athletes, if there's volunteer coaches, volunteer refs, things like that, to not be so critical of them and so negative towards them that they leave the sport landscape or they don't want to be involved anymore. We're seeing this a lot in a lot of sports with things like refs, and some of them are paid, some of them aren't, but how you treat those people who really help facilitate the sport are what will really allow your sport to go in a positive direction or a negative direction, right? And that to me is the ultimate responsibility of us and everybody in the sport world is to treat those volunteers with the utmost respect and to really make sure that they feel appreciated because a lot of the events that we put on, a lot of the games that we put on, a lot of the tournaments that we put on don't happen without volunteers.
Definitely not. No, I agree with 100%. I had an opportunity to work with softball New Brunswick last summer, and things are starting to not go down, but we're getting a lot less people who are volunteering, or even in paid roles. Like, sometimes paid roles, often we say, oh, well, at least someone's getting paid. Yeah, but they're not always getting paid, the gold bars there, right? It's
Yeah,
not
exactly.
a 401k saving. It's, and plus they're most of the times when people are getting paid in these referee positions and stuff like that, they're getting paid, but it's also the time is not always a favorable time, right? It's usually maybe 5 o'clock on a Saturday or 9 a.m. on a Sunday, or so a
One
lot of
hundred
times
percent.
they're giving time away from their families to be able to give to a sport, right? So yeah, no, I definitely agree with everything you just kind of dabbled into there. It's our responsibility as much as the parents' responsibility, right, to the attendees to the events, to make sure, like, you keep a there's a trash can for a reason. You don't just throw your stuff on the floor, or you there's you know you respect you treat people how you want to be treated. You used to say that in school, like a young age, and that's kind of, it transposes back to that. That's kind of, you treat people how you want to be treated, and in that sense, I think it transposes to volunteers having a good time, having being able, because at the end of the day, when I volunteered at things, I've always looked at how do we make this fun? Because at the end of the day, when you volunteer, you're working, right? You are technically working, but how do we make it fun? Like, you're here, you're with a group, you're with people, and that's what I always liked, was not necessarily like, oh, I have to go clean the trash, or I don't, but oh, we're a group of four, and we get to go. Kind of, I'll bleep this up. We get to go shoot for a second, and like kind of chat, and we get clean and whatever. And like that aspect, I absolutely love. It's kind of comes back to like a team aspect in a sport environment, but not on the
That's a
field.
great point. I'm glad you made that point too, because that is one that I miss. It is important you make things fun, because ultimately that's what makes a volunteer want to come back. Because volunteers are some of the most passionate people out there.
Oh,
To
yeah.
do something for free on even like you said, sometimes on undesirable times, on a Friday night, on a Saturday morning, on whatever, when other people are spending time with their families or, going to the gym or doing those things that we all like to do outside of work, you really have to make sure that you're making things fun. And that's really, really important. And I work with this program called Fun Sports, but it stands for Funding for Underprivileged Neighborhoods. But a lot of them come from tough neighborhoods, but what we try to do with everything, all the sports that we put on, is to really make sure that they have fun. And we tell them at the beginning, we have two rules. The number one rule is that we respect each other. If somebody's talking, whether it's the coach or somebody else, we listen. And that goes across, being kind, you're not hurting each other, yada. So respect is the number one rule. And number two is that we have to have fun. And at the end of every session, we ask the kids, how do you think we did for respect? And we give them a number out of 10. And then we ask them, how much fun did you have at the end? And usually the answer ranges from 10 to infinity, and that is all ultimately the biggest way of reading how likely kids are to come back. If they're having fun, if volunteers are having fun, if volunteer staff are having fun, and the number one volunteer that I've experienced is the volunteer coach, the parent. I think we've all been on a team at some point that, the coach stepped away for whatever reason, mid-season, there was no coach availability, and some parent had to step up. Even my first team that I got coached in New Brunswick, my dad coached me and stepped up. And, we wouldn't have had a team if it wasn't for that volunteerism, right? So it's really important, again, to be kind to those volunteer coaches, because sometimes they are the only reason that a team is happening, that a game is happening, that a season is happening. And then sometimes you hear other parents who aren't the ones that stepped up, criticizing that parent for how they're coaching instead of offering support, offering guidance, offering feedback. And you can see how that framing it differently really changes the narrative. If you're offering support rather than saying, "Hey, you're doing a horrible job," hey, and it's like, "Well, you come do it then. I'm the one who stepped up to do it." So it's really important that we're kind to those co volunteer coaches, those people who are stepping up when nobody else did, so that a sport can even happen.
And that's a terrific point. I completely even forgot about that. You brought that point up, and I was like, yeah, it's true. I remember playing hockey growing up, and you had something happened to our baseball, and something happened to a coach, or got a job somewhere else, or had to move, or whatever. And if nobody stepped up, that was it. Our season was done. We would have just, And above all that, I didn't grow up from a predominantly rich family, so if my parents put in, registration fees, gear, and all that, and then the season is done after a month, like that's money that we could have used as a family, right? Instead of putting, so even that person stepping up probably changes the environment for not only themselves, but for a lot of other people that goes unseen, right? And even coaches who are there all the time, and like that, not all the time, but I mean coaches who in general, I find they go through so much scrutiny from parents and stuff like that over decisions that they make. There's like you said, people make mistakes, man. We're all human. You're not a robot on there. It's not a it they're playing a game. They want, obviously, yes, you want the coach to give the best that they can, but if something happens, some people have bad days, and it happens. And I hate to see something like that happen, and that would drive a coach away from a further season. You know what I'm saying? Like, if they're
100%.
balling.
There's so many people who are leaving sport because of negative experiences with teammates, with officials, with parents who are just in the stands yelling at them. Like in Nova Scotia, over the last year, like they're at some point they stopped allowing spectators in high school basketball games and junior high basketball games because the refs were just getting so much abuse that they were like, "I'm gonna stop reffing unless there's something done." So the something that they could do was to stop allowing fans to come in, so at least the athletes were still able to play, and the refs could do their job without all of this negative criticism and scrutiny from the fans. And in a way, because criticism is fine, but it's people, being abusive towards referees, being abusive towards these volunteer coaches or even paid coach roles, like, which creates a really negative landscape for everybody, including the athletes who are just trying to play a sport and sometimes end up being, the ones who are ultimately the most affected because they can't focus on their sport when, there's Jimmy in the stands yelling at every 2 seconds at the ref and at their kid to do better. And you're so distracted by the negativity that you can't even just have a good time. And ultimately, you mentioned it, have fun.
Totally agree with that, man. Like, just like, even, yeah, like, I think oftentimes when you're in the stands, I think people forget that, like, exactly that. Like, they're people that are, they're volunteering. We'll go back to that. Like, they're volunteering their time to make sure that the sport or the event is happening. And to see things like that happen, it kind of breaks my heart to some extent, right? Because I remember playing a game. I played basketball growing up as well, and I remember playing, and it's an awesome feeling to look out in the stands and see your parents there. And because a few bad apples decided that their actions were more important, now that kid maybe might not have the opportunity to look at the stands and see their parents, because like you just said, they're not allowed to have spectators anymore because of that.
And I was one of those kids who, like, I played through my skin when my parents came to watch. If I knew that there was somebody who, I knew who came, who took the time to come and watch me, I was putting in 300%. I think for a while there, I had a record between like 11 and like 17 that, like, every single game that my mom or dad came to, I scored. Like, it meant that much more to me that they took the time to come and watch me, and I had to deliver. So think about what that does to those kids like myself, who all of a sudden there's no spectators and there isn't somebody to look up out in the crowd and give you that extra motivation and feel that safe space, you know, because a lot of the times, in both New Brunswick and Nova Scotia to move here, I was the only Black kid on the team, right? And I didn't have another kid on the team who knew what I was going through, who I could even just confide in, you know. And because we moved a lot, I always had to start making new friendships and stuff. So having my parents there was really big for me in terms of feeling like I could do what I needed to do and it was okay. And I would just look at them in the crowd and I would feel that security that it's okay, Marvin, you got this, you know. But when they weren't there, I didn't feel that same security. I didn't feel that same level of, you know, comfort to be able to play my game knowing that everything was going to be fine. And there was things that happened when my parents weren't there. You know, I went to a national tournament in Cape Breton at 16, and I unfortunately had somebody call me the N-word. And you know, I wish my parents would have been there for it, you know, because how it was handled was horrible. You know, the ref didn't know what to do, so he asked both of us to go off the field. And to this day, it's one of the things I feel like if it wasn't for my own perseverance to be able to continue to want to participate in sport, I could have quit sport on that day. I could have quit soccer on that day and never gone back to it. And I will thank the positive people at the club that I played at who supported me and, you know, encouraged me to continue playing, even though it wasn't fair that I was, you know, faced abuse on the field, this verbal abuse, and then was also asked to go off the field until there was a hearing the next day. Like, you know, these are the things that and the experiences that I've gone through that make me want to ensure that other kids and other people don't go through that. And ultimately, that is what I want to do for the sport landscape. And those are some of the barriers that I want to be able to remove, knowing that I lived through some of them. And so there's kids out there who could go through that and they could quit, they could be suicidal, they could, you know, there's so many things now in the world with depression and everything that happens that it's really, really important that we have a safe space for athletes and kids to be able to participate in sport.
I like how you said that, and like a safe space, really a key word here. Like it can be the place where it's the only place that they feel safe in some instances, right? We don't know what's going on behind closed doors. We don't know
It's
how,
our
you know,
home.
yeah, at home or at school or anything, you know, how those people are being, you know, what the environment they're facing on a daily basis. Some people that field or that rink or that area they're doing that activity, like I said, is a safe space. And then when you get there, having an extra abuse because of
The look or the way you speak or the way you
just
where
because
you're
you're
from.
different, that, you know, it's crazy because that's not what the intention of that place is supposed to be, right? I grew up and through the sports systems as well, and to know that, you know, like I said, we weren't a rich family, but I was able to at least get through sports with a minimal amount of barriers. And although we did face some, I can't believe or I can't imagine how it must be for young athletes going through with the multitude of barriers that are on top of all of that, right?
My journey is filled with people who supported me. I would not be where I am without so many different people who supported me along my journey. Like it re I really believe in that statement that it takes a village to raise a child, and my community and my quote unquote village has really supported me. Even that tournament that I talked about, going to the national tournament in Cape Breton, like, you know, my I had to ask for a loan from one of my managers, you know, and that guy, I'll give him a shout out, Angelo, who was also the equipment manager for the Wanderers in year one, and he's known in the soccer community as, you know, very vocal guy. But what a lot of people don't know is what Angelo does behind the scenes. You know, he sponsored for my payment for me to be able to go to that national tournament, and he refused to take a payment back. You know, like he wouldn't allow me to pay him back. So, you know, people like that, the way that I've been able to quote unquote pay back is by going above and beyond to make sure that I remove those barriers for other kids coming after me. right? And it's that passing it forward mentality that we all really need to adopt, because if somebody helps you, the least you can do is help somebody else.
I like that. And shout out Angelo, you said?
Yeah,
Well, give
shout
a
out to
shout out to
Angela.
Angelo, man, because without that, like you said, you went through that hurdle, you got through it, and now you are where you are. So Angelo, shout out to you, man, because I wouldn't be sitting across from Marvin right now, probably doing this pod if that wouldn't happen. So shout out to Angelo.
Honestly, and Angelo's a legend in his own right. He's one of those
Might have to
few
get him on the
for sure.
podcast.
But no, there's a lot of Angelos out there in the world for other people, whether that's a coach that just took a little extra time to get to know you and your story, and even that first coach that I talked about who cut me, Adam Beggs. I started an Arsenal supporters pub here in Halifax that I'm the president and founder of, and he's in that supporters club, and we hang out and we watch games, and it's such a full circle moment every time I see him, because I'm like, man, you cut me, man. And he's like, it was character development, Marvin. You needed that character development, and you got humbled. Maybe you needed to be a little bit more humble, but I always thank him just for giving me a second chance. And he could have just ignored it and been like, who does this kid think he is, thinking that I made a mistake, whatever, right? But that taught me so much in my own coaching journey, to own mistakes and not feel like I know it all, right? Like, there's so many things that we don't know. And I don't know if you've ever heard the saying, the more you know, the more you realize how little you know,
I
right?
definitely,
And
Oh, yeah.
so I really have a lot to thank for different people like that in my life who stepped up and created opportunities for me. And ultimately, that's why I have this desire to break down barriers and to support others, because there's no way I'd be here talking to you if it wasn't for the many people who supported me on my journey to this day.
So growing up, would you say were you a shy kid, or were you pretty outgoing?
I was shy at first, and this is where it comes down to when you're the only, if I'm the only Black kid on the team, I would be shy for the first little bit until I get to know everybody. But no, I'm not generally a shy kid. I'm a shy person. I'm outgoing. I'm a social butterfly. I've been named a number of times. But the shyness is based off of lack of comfort and lack of that safe space. Anybody, even who's outgoing or super bubbly, there's moments where they act shy or quote unquote introverted if they don't feel that safe environment for them to be who they are, So yeah, when I first moved to Canada, I was quote unquote shy, but that's because of how people treated me initially. Like, the first school that I went to in Fredericton, Priestman Elementary, shout out Priestman Elementary, the wall ball sessions at recess were amazing. But
Shout out Priestman Elementary.
Priestman Elementary. But unfortunately, some of the kids that I started playing wall ball with that I thought were my friends, within the first 2 weeks of school, because remember I told you I didn't know English, so I had to learn English as well while I was going through my classes and stuff. The second week of school, these kids that I thought were my friends, told me that it was like a ritual that all these kids, every new kid had to pull this button by the door, this red button by the door, and I go to it and I read it, and my basic English that I'm understanding, it says pull. So I'm like, oh, okay, like, yeah, it says pull. They're telling me that everyone has to pull it. Cool. I pull it and brrr, fire alarm goes off. I get ink on my arm, and that was one of the most traumatic experiences for me, because I thought these kids were a safe space. I thought they were my friends. I thought we were all innocent and children. And then all of a sudden, I'm like, wow, these kids tricked me. These kids trapped me. And the principal comes, and I'm just sitting there crying, like, not really understanding what's happened. And the principal comes over, and he's like, Marvin, what's going on? And I'm like, they told me to pull it, and I'm crying. And the principal's like, it's okay. Who told you to pull it? And they get the kids and they speak to them, and they're like, this is not okay, what you did to Marvin. Like, this is not how we treat new kids. And honestly, it shifted me, my mentality from at that point, I thought everybody was good and kind. But from that very moment, I remember I approached everyone differently. It was like everyone was guilty until proven innocent to me in a lot of ways. And so it's really, again, about that safe space. And those kids ruined that safe space for me. And I was shy for probably a year or two after that, right? Where I just really was uncomfortable and I didn't trust people because I'm in a new country, I'm in a new province, I'm in a new city, I'm in a new school, and everything is new. I'm learning a new language. And then on top of that, these kids throw this onto my plate. Like things weren't already hard enough for me, right? So I became very shy for about a year or two until other experiences and sport, ultimately, actually, in soccer, playing soccer and getting more friends and feeling like I was valued, and especially being a good soccer player. A lot of people, like you, they ask you to hang out, they ask you to do things when you're good at something. So it was sport ultimately that gave me the confidence in life, in school, and work to actually be able to jump back from that negative experience and still be the person that I am today. So this is what I say, like sport was everything for me.
Thank you for that really insightful information. I'm sorry that that happened, unfortunately. I would tell my younger self or anybody listening in that things get better in the sense that, obviously confidence wise and all that stuff, but things do get better. So if there's, a parent listening in or a kid out there listening in that, is facing adversity right now, things do get better. But is there anything from your experience that you can give as advice, how to face that adversity and how to overcome it?
It's to be resilient. Resilience is one of the greatest traits that you can have. And don't allow one negative experience to stop you from doing something, ultimately, right? There's so many examples of Michael Jordan was cut from his high school team. There's other high-level athletes who talk about Steve Nash, who was a
Favorite,
soccer
my
player.
favorite athlete, man, my all-time favorite athlete, Steve Nash.
Right, like he's a soccer player, and then in high school switched to playing basketball, and his brother did the same. He was a basketball player and switched to soccer. His brother ended up being a pro soccer player. Steve Nash ended up being maybe the greatest Canadian basketball player in the NBA, right? So
And then he
it's all
bought his
about,
brother's soccer team.
yeah, exactly, right? But it's not allowing one negative experience or being cut from one team or being yelled at by somebody. There's if you're having a bad experience on one team, I'm sure there's another team you can join. But don't just quit just because of one negative experience. With that being said, like let's be kind to people to not give them those negative experiences as well, because I can appreciate that there are some people who, after one experience, that's enough for them to be like, I'm done. You know what I mean? But my advice is to be resilient. Like you said, you played hockey even with your glasses not being the best case scenario to go into the helmet, but I'm sure you found a way to make it work. The same way that, even having that negative experience with, at Nationals, having somebody call me the N-word or whatever, like I could have quit at that moment, but look at where I am today because I didn't quit. So that is my biggest advice, is don't quit because of any negative person, negative experience, negative any negativity really. Just adjust, whether that's a change of scenery, a change of team, a change of mentality, a change, just some sort of change that you might need to be able to continue doing something that you love or want to do.
And I think you could
I think
also
you
add
could
on to
also.
that. And you, I think you brought it up as a perfect example is talk to people. Mention it. Like if something happened to you negatively, like you said, you had your teammates with you had people that were supportive around you, right? So I unfortunately, looking back, I don't think I ever talked to anybody about the experiences that I faced with, my glasses in the sense that it was something that in my confidence, it affected me, and my, it affected me anxiety, like it affected me internally, and I never talked to anybody about it because I was too scared that they were gonna laugh at me or they were gonna say, well, it's not a big deal, like just go, just get through it. But I probably should have, looking back, like someone could have at least given me even just the, it's okay. Just someone saying those words to me probably would have helped out. Just straight up saying like it's not the end of the world that you have to play with glasses. It's okay. Like you're here to have fun. And so I would definitely say, and I think like you said, you mentioned it to your teammates and all that. I think if obviously it comes back to the safe zone. If coaches, if volunteers, if teammates, parents, and everybody is able to provide that safe environment, then yes, talk to people about something that if it affected you and you feel like it's going to affect you, I think it's really important to talk about it.
100%. And do you feel like now looking back, there's anything you could have done differently? Like with your glasses, like do you think there's anything you would have done differently just to be more involved, or do you feel like everything happened the way it should have?
You know what? And to some extent, I think I would just leave it as is because that, for me anyway, not necessarily the negative experience, but the resilience we're talking about led to me to be acceptant of who I am in the sense that, I'm walking around today with really thick glasses and I'm okay with that. That's me. It's me. And and that kind of came through all of that, from that. But it did allow me to see that, like, whether I wear glasses or not, someone's going to have something negative to say. So I'm me, and if something has, obviously that comes with age as well, but I always feel as though now I see, I think I've said this before, it's a Conor McGregor quote. I don't know, people can have whatever Conor McGregor opinion they can, okay? But his quote, he says it's something along the lines of it's internal versus external, in the sense that as long as you are able to be okay with yourself internally, everything external is it's noise. So that's how I see it now. It's like if
That's
I walk
great.
down the
That's great
street
advice.
and someone's like, oh, four eyes or whatever, you know what, man, you're probably have that person's probably having so much more evil in their life that they have to do that, or they have to demonstrate an act of violence or an act of abuse, that I kind of feel more bad for them at that point, because I'm me. I know I'm me. And but that they have to portray that aspect, there's something that it just goes over now. It's just it's not it's I'm okay with who I am, and anybody can have their opinion. They're allowed to have their opinions, but I'm okay with who I am.
So that's great advice, honestly, Pierre, because it only took me until only like the last 4 or 5 years, to be honest, to really not just understand that, but like live it and let it sink in. You know what I mean? That like it really doesn't matter what anybody thinks of me or what they say, and but it's you're right. Age is one of the things that allows you over experiences and time to realize that like it doesn't actually matter what all these naysayers think or what these haters is the most common term you hear athletes say. You're not successful if you don't have haters, but it's tuning them out that really allows you to be able to be the best version of yourself. And at 35 I can say that I am good at that now, but it's empowering the youth at those young ages to understand that, because the sooner that kids and athletes understand that it doesn't matter what that guy's on the sideline is yelling, it doesn't matter what that, even if you have a negative coach experience, it doesn't matter what they're saying, it doesn't matter if your parents aren't supportive, it doesn't matter if you have there's a bully who's bullying it, like as long as you're able to have that internal compass, that internal strength, that internal resilience to be able to say, yeah, it doesn't matter, I'm going to do this regardless, I put in the effort and time and I know my value and I know I'm awesome. That is the thing that pisses off haters and critical people the most, if you just shut them out, if you ignore them, because the worst thing you can do is add fuel to the fire by commenting back, showing that you're frustrated, any of those things that gives them that motivation to do more, to be even more negative, to come at you, right? So
You're just giving them
to the
power at
young,
that point, right? You're giving in to
100%.
what they want, right? So
Exactly. So the sooner that you as an athlete is can tune out all the noise, be it good or bad, that is how to really, really be successful, is to just control what you can and avoid what you can't. It's like the Serenity Prayer. I don't know
The
if you've
what?
heard of that one. The Serenity Prayer.
No, I have not.
It's like, God, give me the courage to change the things that I can and
Okay.
like ignore the things that I can't, and to know, and the wisdom to know the difference, something along those lines. That's one that I really live by. The coaches too, like, it's important to empower the athletes. I guess that's what I was trying to say, is make sure that you're reminding them, you know, that it doesn't matter what anybody says. And I say this to a lot to my teams that I coach at the beginning, don't listen to the ref. Don't listen to the other team's coach. Don't listen to the other players. Don't listen to anybody who's in the stands. You've done the work. Listen to yourself. Listen to your teammates. And ultimately, that's all that matters. You know what I mean? And I had to pull up the Serenity Prayer because I want to quote it properly. So it's, give me the serenity to accept the things that I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and wisdom to know the difference.
I like that. Before we do some final send-offs, I just wanted to give you the stage real quick. If you have anything that you'd like to shout out, I know you said that you also host a podcast, so feel free to shout that out here and anywhere people can reach out to you, social media or stuff like that, if you'd like to include.
Yeah, for sure. So first of all, thank you, Pierre, for having me. This has been awesome. Really appreciate the open conversation, and thank you for sharing your experiences as well. And it's something that I didn't really think about, even with the glasses and hockey. And you know, it's, I guess I just want to encourage everyone to have an open mind. You don't really know what battles anybody's facing, and some people share them, some people don't. So that's really my outro message. Just be kind. Just really lead with kindness. And for me, so I have the Coach's Idea podcast, which is on all platforms except for Apple. It's Coach's Idea, and Idea stands for inclusion, diversity, equity, and accessibility, which, as you've probably heard me talk about today, I'm very passionate about. Other than that, if you are a coach and or are interested in becoming a coach, feel free to reach out to me, and I'm happy to, you know, help you with, you know, what courses to take. And if you just have questions, I can connect you with people. If you are just looking for a team to coach, whatever it might be, don't hesitate to reach out. And other than that, thank you for having me, Pierre. And I look forward to hopefully coming back again in the future or having you on my podcast.